I don't know if Jay Baker is a name that you're familiar with. If you're not, you probably are familiar with Jay's parents, Jim and Tammy Faye Baker. You may also know that their family's story involves improprieties that took place in the 1980s that resulted with Jim Baker being sentenced to 45 years in prison. Here's how the History Channel website puts it. Although the evidence was not particularly strong, Jim Baker was convicted in 1989 and sentenced to 45 years in prison. The sentence was later reduced to 8 years, and he was released in 1994. Jay was 11 years old when his parents' ministry started to fall apart, and he was only 13 when his dad began his prison term, and I've often wondered what must that experience have been like for him. Well, Jay Baker and I talk about that in this episode, and we talk about how his experience shaped him spiritually, especially in regard to his understanding of judgment and grace. Now, when you hear a story like this one of the questions that may come to mind for you is what really matters in ministry, right? Is it having multitudes of viewers on TV or online, which during the time of this pandemic and an online church everywhere, so many of us aspire to these days? Is that what makes for a flourishing church, or is it something else? And if that's something that's important to you, I want to invite you to download my ebook, 6 Practices of a Flourishing Church. Does massive attendance mean your church is flourishing? Well, maybe. Or maybe there's more to it than that. If you'd like to get 6 Practices of a Flourishing Church, you can go to marcuswatson.com/6practices and download it there. Well, I'm really grateful for this conversation with Jay Baker, and I am excited to share it with you. I'm Marcus Watson, and this is Episode 95 of Spiritual Life and Leadership. Everyone, I'm here with Jay Baker. Jay is the pastor of Revolution Church, and I'm excited to have him here with me. Hi, Jay. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Hey, tell us briefly what you do.
Well, I've been pastoring a church that's moved all over the country a few times. Yeah. We've been from Arizona to Atlanta to LA to New York to Minneapolis, to now I'm in Seattle. So quite busy. And I mean, not that busy. It's been, You know, we have good stretches. Yeah. I also write books. Mm-hmm. And I speak, well, not as much as I used to, obviously, but I have to admit that was dying down a little bit before COVID.
Right.
You know, but yeah. Still, you know, public speaker and author and pastor of Revolution Church. Yeah. And son of Jim and Tammy Faye.
Right. So I knew you had just moved to Seattle. I didn't realize you had moved around so many times with your church.
Yeah.
Wow. So this is, you're a pro at this moving and starting
I am. I mean, yeah. I'm not the typical like preacher who's like, God told me to go somewhere. You know, right. I usually go places for normal reasons. Like, you know, I think I moved to Minnesota because my wife at the time got a job and we lived there. We ended up divorced, but we have 2 kids. And so we wanted to keep the kids together, but we wanted to leave Minnesota. So we agreed to go to Seattle. So it was.
You
know, well, that's still working things out.
Yeah. That's good. And as you mentioned, your parents are Jim and Tammy Faye Baker, which is an interesting story. And so we'll get to hear some of that story today and how that has shaped you into who you are and how you do church and do ministry and do life and all that. So that'll be good. But let me start with these first 3 kind of opening get to know you questions. And the first one is, what would a mirror opposite of yourself be like?
Oh, you know, I am so, I don't think I'm very easy to pin down on things. So it would be really difficult to figure out what the mirror opposite of me would be like. I mean, maybe someone who like doesn't like, you know, questions or conversation and hates music. I mean, you know what I mean? Because I mean, those are two things I really love a lot.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And feels neutral on every subject. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's like, it's hard to tell. You know, I wish to be like the Joker or Darth Vader.
Right.
But I feel like I have a little bit of, I mean, I really like Hegel, and Hegel talks a lot about the contradiction. And I really feel like I have a lot of that in me. The contradiction is alive, and I know it, and I know it well, and learn to embrace it and work with it. So, you know, the mirror image is kind of me.
They're both there. That's cool. That's a good answer. I like that. All right, here's my next question. And that is that, Jay, if your life was a book, what would the title be?
Well, funny thing is, I've already, my first book when I was 23 was an autobiography. So it's
there
Son
you
of
go.
A Preacher Man. I think it would probably be something a little bit different than that. But probably the realities of life or something, you know, I mean, it's just life is so complex and so up and down, you know, but at 23, that was easier way to sum it up.
Yeah, right. Well, and probably the publisher had something to do with that, I bet.
They did. Yeah. Actually, Rolling Stone magazine had done an article about me, and it was called Son of a Preacher Man. So when they signed me to do a book, they're like, we're calling it that. So I was like, okay.
Right. I think I saw that article. I don't know if I read it, but I skimmed it at the store. That was the first time I saw, I saw you when you were young on TV and stuff, you know, and then I saw this and I was like, wow. And it was like a big deal. Oh, he's doing ministry in bars. Like that was cutting edge, I guess, at the time, right?
At the time it was, yeah. People were freaked out.
Yeah. I'm like, boy, he doesn't look anything like his dad. I mean, you do look like your dad, but the way you were dressed and the tattoos and all that, it was like, wow, that's cool. He's doing his own thing, man. That's cool.
I definitely look like a punk rock version of my
that's
dad.
Awesome. Yeah. That's cool. All right, cool. And then last question here, just kind of a fun one. If you had to recommend some TV series or something on Netflix or Amazon or whatever, what would that be?
I really, I didn't finish it, but it was, I started watching most of it, and it was Perry Mason.
Oh.
I think it's on Showtime. And it's a prequel to the Perry Mason TV show.
Really?
But it's really dark and gritty, and he's just a detective. He's not a lawyer yet.
Okay.
And, you know, it's...
Is it a new
show? R-rated.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a new show.
Okay.
But I really liked it. I mean, I really got into that. I liked that. And then there's a TV show about the Wu-Tang Clan.
Oh.
Which is the hip-hop band.
Yeah.
And that was really good, too. So those are two I'd... Oh, and my favorite show in the world... is a show called Peep Show, and it's an English comedy.
Okay.
And that I would highly recommend to anybody.
I've never heard of it. Where do you find that?
I'm pretty sure they have it on Amazon right now.
Amazon? Okay.
It keeps moving around because it's an English comedy. So it's been on Netflix before. Now it's not. And so it's on Amazon right now, and it's
cool.
It's pretty brilliant.
All right. What do you like about it?
Well, it's two roommates. And you can hear their inner thoughts, you know, and they kind of loathe each other, but love each other at the same time.
Nice.
And so it's just this like constant, like, you know, one's kind of just like crazy and into music, and the other one's like real straight laced. I mean, it's just the comedy and the, just the reality of who they really are as people. And just, it's like how we think. You know, it's kind of portrayed, and you realize how hilarious it is. A lot of us, and that you can laugh at things like that. I think that's what's really neat about the British. And my best friend's from Belfast, Ireland, and the Irish, is they just, their sense of humor is very disarming, and it also kind of lays everything out on the table, but through like a joke or something.
Okay.
Huh. And if you have a bit of a tough skin, it really is kind of a beautiful way to have a relationship.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Good. That's awesome. All right. Well, so, one other thing. You just posted recently that Elton John is doing a musical about your mom. How does that feel? That's wild.
It's amazing. I mean, I love Elton John.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's an amazing person, and it's really amazing that someone like of his stature is doing a musical about my mother. So it's really cool. I mean, I wish that they would call me and get me involved.
Right.
You know, it's the type of thing where it's like, why aren't there more Bakers involved?
Right.
But, but still I'm really excited about it. And there's also a movie, a major motion picture coming out starring Jessica Chastain as my mom and Andrew Garfield as my dad. He was the second Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So that's coming out, I guess, either this year or the beginning of next year, called The Eyes of Tammy Faye. And so, I'm, you know, a lot about my family's life is resonating with people again for some reason.
Interesting. I wonder. Well, I'm curious. I wonder why that is. But well, let's talk about your family story, your story, really, and maybe we can kind of get some clarity on that. Who knows? But here's the thing. So I mentioned that I saw that article that you that I think the one that you mentioned, and there you were, you know, with your tattoos and looking much different than your dad did, but still doing ministry. And then the other memory that kind of comes to mind for me when I think of you is I remember, so I was like in seventh or eighth grade, and that's when PTL fell apart, and you know, Jimmy Swaggart had his thing at about the same time, and and I remember seeing this just on the news, probably you and your sister, I think, and your parents, and standing in front of your house. And I don't remember what they said, but it was sort of probably announcing they're leaving PTL, maybe.
Probably. Just,
yeah. And so maybe we can start somewhere around there. What was that like for you? And what happened? What was your experience?
You know, it was... I mean, my whole life had been growing up in PTL in Heritage USA. You know, my dad had the biggest Christian television network in the country.
Yeah.
He also had built this area called Heritage USA, which was like this huge Christian retreat center, but also had like a water park and hotels and constant ministry and music and all different type of thing. I mean, it was really wild. And they did a daily TV show. My mom did two TV shows because she had at Tammy's house party. And then he did Sunday service. I mean, my dad was a hard worker. I mean, he was a he's a workaholic, just pure and simple.
Yeah.
And, so I grew up in that. I had bodyguards because people always, you know, said they were going to kidnap us. And I mean, it was really like, you were just, it was this really surreal world.
Yeah.
And, you know, my parents had money and we had a nice house and, and so I lived in kind of a bubble, like, you know, the Christian school that I went to was the Christian school of my parents' church, you know? So, you know, and I was kind of looked at of like, oh, here's the heir to the throne type of thing. And so when all that's happened, it was completely jarring. I mean, I think the only thing I could connect it to is maybe losing a parent, which I have lost. I lost my mother in 2007. It's all the foundation was just shaken. I mean, everything was like, all the employees that worked with us, all the bodyguards that were there because we were, you know, on, my parents were trying to just take some time off when it all happened. And so, you know, everybody's leaving.
Yeah.
Everything's changing.
Yeah.
So it was really scary because then all of a sudden the news came on and everything was negative.
Yeah.
And within days it was like every night on Johnny Carson, there was a joke, you know what I mean? Every Saturday Night Live had skits about my parents, you know, all of a sudden all the people who wanted to be on my dad's show now wanted to have an opinion about why my dad was a bad person or why my parents were bad people. And it was almost as though the church completely scapegoated him. And then every person outside of the church who had an idea of what a bad preacher or televangelist was decided to focus all that energy directed right onto my parents.
Yeah.
And so it was just like, you know, they're everything but children of God. Yeah. And so it was really surreal. I mean, that when you see that picture where we're standing, I think, in front of like a brown gate, white, well, thank goodness my parents had actually just gotten that place with the place we lived in before was just in a little neighborhood with no walls around it. But it was really good that we had walls because our whole front of our house was full of the press everywhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they were renting U-Haul trucks and stuff to get on the top of the U-Haul trucks and shoot down into the house. So I remember we had to put sheets up on all the windows and stuff so they couldn't shoot into the house. Yeah, I mean, it was completely dramatic being told like, oh, you know, when we go home, we're just going home to pack up the house. Everything's done. Yeah. You know, because the house was the parsonage and it didn't belong to us.
Wow.
You know, your guards, because my body, you know, our security guards were like family to us, you know, because they were intimately involved in our lives.
Yeah.
You know, and then all of a sudden you realize these people are employees. And at 11 years old, it's hard to tell the difference between people who work for your folks and don't, you know, and then all of a sudden seeing people on the news who were close to you saying horrible things. Mm. So, and Jerry Falwell just kind of came right. It was who my dad turned the church over to.
Okay.
Just turned real quick and was all of a sudden went from like, oh, we're going to restore you to Jim Baker is a cancer in the body of Christ type thing. So it was, you know, I mean, honestly, I feel like mental health wise, I've probably just learned to deal with a lot of the coping mechanisms that I built over the years, probably just in the past 2 years.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it literally left a deep mark.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and how old were you when that first started? You were like in elementary school, right? Something like that.
When PDL started?
Oh, you said 11.
No, I was 11 when we lost everything.
Right. Yeah.
And I was, my dad and mom were already doing it when I was born.
Yeah.
So I was like pretty much born on television.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and your dad went to prison for a while.
And about 2 years later, he served 5 years in prison. Yeah. He originally got 45 years from the
judge. I remember that. I mean, all I was hearing was the negative stuff, but even I thought to myself, holy cow, that's extreme.
Well, the judge's nickname was Maximum Bob.
Really?
And so he was known to give the maximum sentence. And he had to actually, he said, well, since the crime happened under this time, I can give him this sentence, you know? So it was really like, he went the long way to give my dad this really horrific sentence.
And so and at that time, nobody in your family had any idea that he would, thankfully, I guess, get out in 5 years. But what was that like for you? I mean,
I remember very scary. I mean, I remember the first time I went and saw him in prison and, you know, I mean, leaving him there was devastating. Mm-hmm. Trying not to cry.
Yeah.
When I saw him come out, you know, in his like prison uniform in the visiting room.
Yeah.
You know, trying to be strong, but still 13 years old and still confused. Yeah. And so, that whole time period between 87 and 89 was just really, really horrific.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it was one of those things where it was just like, just one bad thing after the next, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Everything I knew was just upside down, completely upside down. And we lived in Florida and my dad was in federal prison. Mm-hmm. And so they put him in Rochester, Minnesota.
Okay.
So, you know, we would either drive with the family, we'd all drive up there, which would take like a day and a half, or we'd, sometimes we'd fly, but yeah, it was really, really tough. You know, it was just, actually when I left Minnesota just a few months ago, right before I left, I drove up to the prison and just kind of looked at it and took some pictures and just kind of was like, just wanted to make peace with that part of my life and just say, you know, thank you. It's over. Goodbye.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So it's kind of amazing that you didn't turn away from God or the church or your faith, but certainly it must have impacted your faith and your relationship with God and your relationship
definitely.
With
and there were definitely times where I ran from it. You know, I didn't want anything to do with it, you know? Or just ignored it because I felt like the church was full of just really mean, angry people. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that's what I started. You know, I grew up with my parents saying, God loves you. He really does. And all this, like, you know, they weren't theologians.
Yeah.
But their messages were always like, you know, Jesus loves you and you can make it and you could do this. And, you know, And then all of a sudden I thought, well, maybe all these people who are being mean are representatives of God. And maybe God's just this horrible monster. So for a long time, I felt like, well, I'll just have to ignore God because I don't know how to follow this angry, mean God, you know? And I was really glad that when I started to get in my studies on my own, I realized like, oh, this is, you know, actually what they were doing was heresy. So plenty of heresy to go around.
Well, so how did your faith develop? Like what was that process like for you?
Well, it's funny because when my dad got out of prison is when I started Revolution.
Okay.
And the reason I started Revolution was he got out of prison and I worked on his case. I worked on his case with the lawyers and stuff and calling all sorts of people all over the country asking to help get my dad's sentence reduced, to write letters. And politicians and preachers and whatever.
And
so when he got out of prison, I was like, okay, this is my time to be a teenager.
Mm.
And so I just started drinking and partying.
Oh.
And that really overwhelmed him. So he sent me to be a part of this group in Arizona called Master's Commission. And which is like this kind of like a YWAM type thing.
Okay.
And I didn't really fit in, but there was this another group wanting to start this church called Revolution to punk rockers and stuff. Oh. And I got along with them really well. So we just all started it together and we're like, yeah, let's do this. And so it was kind of funny that how that fell in, because it was kind of like I was kind of forced into it. And then in about a year into it, I quit because I felt like God was still that angry God. Because it was an Assemblies of God church and all this stuff. And I still had this idea that maybe I couldn't live up to these expectations. And when I quit, I moved in with a family that actually took me in for a little while, the Polks in Atlanta, Georgia. And I went back to their place and I said, you know, I remember talking to D.E. Polk, who's a pastor. But he was just like my brother at the time. And I said, I feel like God hates me. You know, I feel like God hates me. And he goes, God doesn't hate you, man. And I was like, well, I feel like it. And I feel like, you know, whatever I do, God is there judging me. And he goes, man, he's like, you're making Christ's death in vain. He's like, you don't, what about grace? And I thought he was just, you know, honestly, I thought he was just kind of trying to make his walk with Jesus a lot easier. You know, like I thought he was compromising.
Okay.
But I was like, whatever, you know, I'm going to move back with you and your family and I'm going to get a job and all this stuff. And I was just had a job and I was just partying, living my life. And I joined AA and I just got one day, I just was so sick of feeling this guilt, like this God, like this giant God behind me.
Yeah.
That I went to DE and I said, listen, if this grace thing is true, can you prove it? Can you just prove it to me? And he goes, yeah. He's like, just read the book of Galatians. And then he said, just read the book of Corinthians, read Romans. And all of a sudden those, you know, no matter who you are, no matter what you've done, all fall short, you know, all these things started just flashing at me. And I remember calling my dad going like, why didn't we talk more about this growing up? You know? And he was like, well, you know, it's often the grace seems too good to be true, you know, and people are afraid of it. And for me, that was it. I was sold and I said, I'm going to go back to the church and talk about grace. And in some ways it was kind of like a Batman moment, you know, where I was like, I'm going to get vengeance for my parents by telling these people what they've done wrong, you know? But in another way, it was like, I became obsessed with this idea of grace, which is still evolving in my life. 24, 25 years later.
So, I mentioned before we started recording, and as we've been talking prior to this, that I want to talk about judgmentalism and judgment, and what you're describing is the opposite of that, right? Clearly, and you've already touched on this, like you experienced a lot of judgment from people on your family, and maybe not
still
directed
do.
At you.
Still
you still do, yeah, right.
Yeah, because my dad's gone very conservative in his past years, and which is very strange to me, but he has. And so,
he was not for a while. Is that
during the PTL years? No. And even when he got out of prison, he was a big supporter of Bill Clinton's. So it never made, so he kind of shifted.
And I remember a book that he wrote called I Was Wrong. I remember that when it came out, I thought, oh wow. You know, so he's had some kind of whatever transformative experience, but,
and it's still there. It's still very like I mentioned earlier, you know, that Hegelian idea of contradiction. Mm-hmm. It's still there. There's still lessons he's learned, but there's also ways that he knows to survive and what he only thing he knows how to do, you know? So, and that's what he, you know, it's easy to fall back into that.
You are, you know, I notice in your, you know, we've only interacted by Twitter so far. And so I always notice your grace, the grace you exhibit towards your parents when they are criticized, right? Mm-hmm. People say something about your dad and you're like, yeah, but this is the same guy who taught me love and compassion and, you know, goodness. And I'm just so struck by that in a really good, positive way. You know, I just love it. And I don't know, it's say more about that, you know, about...
Well, I mean, even with my dad, when he feels like, you know, oh, son, I'm afraid you're going off the rails. I'm like, this is, it's your fault. It's you and mom's fault. You know, you both showed me this idea that love trumps everything constantly. And so that's what led me on this journey. And I studied my Bible. And then I started reading, you know, started buying books about Greek and Hebrew because I have dyslexia. So I didn't speak Greek or Hebrew, but I started to use books to understand the Bible. And then I started to read Bible things on biblical history.
Yeah,
and then wanted to understand the context and what were the laws in Rome and why was Paul saying this certain thing in Rome and not here? And, you know, and then archaeology became interesting to me as well, too. So it's like I wanted to know everything that was happening.
Wow.
And what happens is when you start to really study as the way they told us to in the Assemblies of God, then all of a sudden they don't like what you found and you studied too much. And
sounds like what happened to Martin Luther.
I mean, honestly, my grace moment was very much like a Martin Luther moment. It was like I was, you know, thought God was striking lightning bolts all around me and I had to find out if grace was true. And then once it hit me, it's the only thing I could talk about. And I still believe it's one of the major concepts that could really reform the church. If people could grasp it. I'm even trying now lately to how do we pull grace out of religion and see it in a human sense, just so we can get more people understanding what it is. But yeah, so for me, it was a, I don't know. What was the question again? I'm sorry.
Just the way that you talk about your parents with such
grace.
Well,
I mean, they really did teach me to love others, you know I mean? My mom having an interview with a openly gay pastor with AIDS in 1985, you know, when people were terrified of people with AIDS, you know, and her not telling him how bad he was, but just asking him questions and, you know, seeing that and knowing that she wasn't supposed to do that and that people weren't happy, but they were doing it anyway. You know, those are the type of things that, that really taught me to love and, and taught me to take risks and, and do what I feel I need to do and follow my convictions. You know, I saw my parents behind the cameras, you know, and had a few really amazing moments where I saw the genuine love my dad had for people, you know, for people who are poor, you know, stuff that he would, we would do for Christmas for people that where there were no cameras around or things like that. Or, you know, just seeing a guy walking to church and dad pulling over the car and be like, hey, get in here. We're going to church. Let's go to church together. You know, things like that, that people think like, you know, instead they want, they think that my dad's like this easy guy to figure out, like he's twirling his mustache and wants to get rich. You know, it's like, no, he just wants to work. He just wants to build things and preach and work. You know, so it's a little bit more complicated than that, but, and he's also the grandfather to my, my kids, you know? So it's, I mean, and my dad taught me about forgiveness in prison because I was so, had so much hatred toward, so much hatred towards Jerry Falwell, you know, and my dad sat me down and went through a book with me and showed me verses in the Bible and things like that of why I should forgive. And I was always so angry at my dad for his willingness to forgive these people. Like when he got out of prison, the people that would, you know, people who turned on him and said horrible things about him, he would have them over for dinner. And tell, you know, and they would be sitting and hanging out. And I was like, what is he doing? He's an idiot, you know? And what I didn't realize is that I was really learning a lot about forgiveness and grace and not carrying that stuff with me. And so, they just, so I can't, you know, that doesn't become null and void because now my dad supports Donald Trump. You know what I mean? It just, that doesn't, it doesn't go out the window.
Yeah, yeah. It really is interesting. I read this book, I guess, almost a year ago now, written in the 90s, called Not How It's Supposed to Be, a Breviary of Sin. And it's by Cornelius Plantinga. And and he talks in there about how you just always, there's always light and darkness, right? In everybody. There's always good and bad in everybody. And that doesn't mean that we don't love them or that we judge them or shun them, right? And you know what? I want to say, like, your parents clearly became sort of icons or caricatures of the crooked televangelists, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately. And I held that because that's all I knew, right, for a long time. And that changed for me, or I was challenged on that, actually, when your mom was on that show, The Surreal Life.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just enthralled with that, especially that season, because I knew who she was, you know? And
I was too. I mean, I was pretty blown away by it too, because I didn't want her to do that. I was like, really? Don't do that show, that, you know, they're just going to make fun of you. And yeah, she did it. And she really showed, I mean, I felt like in some of it, she was really showing us the essence of Christ.
Yeah.
You know? I was just blown away by it.
There's this other guy, you know, you'd think this porn star guy was on the show. And
yeah, Ron Jeremy.
Yeah, right. And they had this really like warm relationship where she really cared about him. And in this, like, the closing episode, I remember she's like, oh, I just love this man, and gave him a kiss on the forehead. I'm like,
yeah,
that's not at all what I would have expected just based on the caricature that I was fed, you know? And yet here's this woman full of grace and love and kindness. So that, you know, I don't know if that affected him in any kind of positive way. I imagine it does, because I think love and grace always has a positive effect,
too,
you know? But how awesome her then to break that stereotype for lots of Christians, right? A lot of us are characterized that way. Anyway, yeah.
I mean, one of the scenes I remember from that show is that Ron Jeremy had a party at the house while everybody is away, and then everybody came back early. I'm sure they planned it that way. You know, like, what will happen if Tammy Faye comes back and there's porn stars in the hot tub, you know?
I think I remember that, yeah.
But one of the scenes is she's braiding this woman who's a porn star's hair and telling her how beautiful she was. And that moment just stuck with me. So like, I'm like, man, this is what I talk about. You know, I'm like, she's been putting into action my whole life, everything that I'm discovering that's in the Bible. And I can't, like, how amazing is that?
Yeah.
That must be why I was drawn to this, is because my mom's the type of person who doesn't sit down and condemn a woman who's a porn star, but she braids her hair and tells her how beautiful she is. So to me, that was like,
that's like Christ-like. You know, that's Christ-like. Yeah. That's what Jesus did, right? It's the kind of thing that Jesus did. That's
and so I'm able to live in those moments and have those moments and realize that life is more complicated. And that's why I don't like to scapegoat people. I don't like to scapegoat conservatives. I don't like to scapegoat liberals. You know what I mean? I'm just not into that anymore. It's just not what I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. I feel like there's so much people can learn from your experience and from the things that you've learned. I feel like we could keep going for a long time talking about this stuff, but
it's extremely interesting. Yeah. I mean, I realize that I have a different view on life, and it's tough because the pushback I get is from both sides.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And so like, I shut my Facebook down for like 3 months because liberal people were coming on there giving me a hard time for loving the other too much, you know? And I was like, what is going on?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm grateful for their experiences I've had, and I hope I can help people think well, argue well, and, you know, use critical thinking skills and not taking the easy way out by just making, you know, these surface judgments.
Yeah. Yeah. If you were to sort of give a final word on, you know, just because, everyone's judgmental in some way or another, right? And I think as Christian leaders, it's especially easy to get judgmental. Like, what would your maybe a final word or just kind of a summarizing thought on why it's so important to let go of judgment?
Well, I mean, it's like, it's so funny. Like, people who want to dedicate their life to the religion of Christianity, you know, the Bible says don't judge.
Yeah.
How you judge, you will be judged. Press down, shaken together, running over. You know, I mean, it's very clear. What do I do with my enemies? Oh, yeah. You love those enemies. Well, who's my enemies? Oh, yeah. Your actual enemies.
Yeah.
You know, the people you despise. It's very clear. It's very much the essence of the faith. Uh-huh. And so we've all gotten way off the track with that, you know, because we all think we can justify. Like, I remember growing up in the 90s and I worked at this Christian television station. And everybody was like, if you're a Democrat, you're not an actual Christian, you know? And then
I still say that.
Yeah. Well, no, then fast forward now. And I see
progressives
saying, if you support Trump or you're a conservative, you're not a real Christian.
Right.
And I'm going, so I guess what I would say is don't return the judgment. Don't return the favor. Mm. You know, when people judge you, don't mirror them.
Yeah.
You know, don't try to be like, well, I know you are, but what am I?
Mm.
I mean, it's a childish way of doing things,
you know,
and it keeps us from having discussions. Mm-hmm. We don't argue well, so we go directly to war and we start thinking in the mindsets of war. Like, you know, when I see people, like conservative people making fun of people getting maced, it really broke my heart. And then I saw this and recently saw this other woman get maced and all my progressive friends making fun of this person who got maced. And I'm like, would we hold a different rule for the other when it's okay for them to get maced and it's not okay for us to get maced.
Right.
That is the ideas. Those are the thoughts of war.
Yeah.
And we are no longer arguing well. We're no longer trying to fix the problem. We're no longer trying to build a greater community of like Martin Luther King was constantly doing, was trying to bring his enemies together and reveal their mistakes to them and show them that they were victims of misinformation rather than making them the enemy. He said the information was the enemy, you know, the misinformation was. So I think if we want to grow as a community, you're never going to say, oh, it's too late to say you're sorry or you were too bad or any of that stuff. What you do is you try to love people and understand them. And I think one of the best ways of doing that is contacting someone if you can and sitting down with them and meeting face to face, because then you are able to recognize one another's humanity. But at the same time, we live in a world where everything's online. And what I would just say is like, is your, you know, the way you tweet, the way you text, the things you do, like the little digs, you know, oh, I might get a lot of likes for this. Is it worth it? And what does it do to the other person?
Right.
And really say it's impossible to sum up one person by what you see on TV or what you've heard, because everything just gets so confused. So, I, you know, don't return bad for bad.
Hey, if people want to find out more about you and the work that you're doing, where can they go?
They can go to revolutionchurch.com. If they want to follow, if they want to listen to our podcast, it's Revolution Church, and it's wherever you podcast. You listen to podcasts. We're on every platform. We're now on YouTube as well, so they can watch it on videos. You can go to Revolution Church's Facebook. We have services there every Sunday at 11 o'clock Seattle time, Washington time. So, and I'm Jay Baker on Twitter, 2Ks. I'm Jay Baker on Instagram as well. And Instagram is where I probably spend most of my time at nowadays. But yeah, so, and I'm on Facebook as well. So,
All right, cool. Well, Jay, man, thank you for this conversation. This has
been great.
It's been a little bit surreal for me to talk to this guy that I've been hearing about, you know, my whole life, pretty much. And but really cool to hear your story and to hear how you know, it's shaped you in such a good, healthy, positive way. I think, through lots of challenges, you know, along the way, but
lots of darkness.
That's how we grow. Hey, thank you. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I love how honest and authentic Jay is. He doesn't run away or shy away from his family's history. He doesn't try to bury it. He doesn't try to hide it. In fact, he has embraced it. And I appreciate that he embraces not only the bad, but also the good. Right? And that's how life is. It is filled with bad and good. And the beautiful truth is that God is in it all, and God is with us through all of it. God can use both the good and the bad in our lives to make us more gracious, more forgiving, less judgmental. In other words, more like Jesus. If this episode has been helpful to you in any way, I just want to ask if there's someone that you might know who you think would also find it helpful. And if so, I'd be so grateful if you would share it with that person. Maybe send them a text or an email or post it on social media. And don't forget to download the free ebook, Six Practices of a Flourishing Church, at marcuswatson.com/sixpractices. Well, thanks so much for being here, and I will see you next time here on Spiritual Life and Leadership.